You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville. This is the Asheville FM News Hour. I'm News Team Correspondent Emma Hutchins, and today I'm joined in the studio by Eliza and Kareem of Mountain True. Welcome.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Remind our listeners, what is it that you do at Mountain True?
Well, Mountain True itself is Western North Carolina's premier, or at least its longest lasting environmental and conservation organization. We work on a wide variety of projects involving public lands, green energy, water quality, and smart community development. And what I do there is I'm the communications director, and I do a lot of the communicating to the public.
I'm the Advocacy and Communications Associate, so I work on communications as well as our advocacy programs.
Excellent. Well, we really appreciate the work that you do in the community, and we're lucky enough to have Mountain True come in and talk with us every couple of months to keep us updated on what's happening in terms of environmental issues, advocacy and policy, as well as much more in this area. So thank you for keeping us up to date. Speaking of which, today there was an important decision made regarding the I-26 Connector project. Can you bring our listeners up to speed about that?
Yeah, so just about an hour ago, the French Broad Metropolitan Planning Organization, or the MPO, just voted to move the I-26 Connector project forward through a process called cascading. That basically means moving a project forward by moving the funding from a statewide pot of money to a local funding source. And so the MPO voted to do that, and that's going to move Section A of the project forward, which is the section in West Asheville and generally west of the French Broad. And we think it's really important that we get this project right. It's going to be going right through the heart of Asheville, so we want to make sure that it benefits Asheville. And actually, at the time of the vote and leading up to it, City Council has still been negotiating with the Department of Transportation to make sure that this project will do just that. So what we want to make sure happens is that we get better bike and pedestrian options, that we have fewer travel lanes along Patton Avenue, and that the design that makes the upcoming Patton Avenue and Bowen Bridge corridor will be a multimodal and urban boulevard. But we still haven't gotten a commitment from the Department of Transportation on those outcomes. So moving forward, we're looking for them to continue negotiating so we can make this project benefit us as much as possible.
Yeah, I think the thing that you have to remember is that the North Carolina Department of Transportation often looks at these issues as though purely from a traffic perspective, moving cars through Asheville and into Asheville as effectively as quickly as possible, which can actually, if you build a ton of lanes, it actually encourages more people to drive, and it can have a negative impact on communities and on our environment. So, ADC and Mountain True have both been working on kind of right-sizing the I-26 corridor for our community. And there's some really great, community envisioned ideas that have come to pass, and some more that the Asheville City Council is advocating for, and that really could make, the Patton Avenue corridor much more pedestrian friendly and just a really cool space for people to kind of visit and live.
If people need a refresher about this project and what it could look like, where would you direct them?
You can check out the ADC's website where they have resources, and you can also come to mountaintrue.org and check out. There's a bunch of resources that we have on our website under the I-26 Connect Us projects. Mm-hmm. Project, yes. The NCDOT calls it their Connector Project, and we call it the Connect Us Project because we've connected our communities to advocate for a better plan.
What happens next for I-26?
Moving forward, so we're hoping that DOT will keep working with Asheville as the negotiations continue. Obviously, the project is moving forward because the funds are going to be cascaded. But coming up, if people want to be involved, the city right now is advertising for people to serve on the I-26 Aesthetics Committee. So that is going to make a ton of project decisions, including things like bike and pedestrian infrastructure, even plantings along the highway and the color of the highway. So you can apply for that through the city's boards and commissions webpage if you're interested.
And just keep paying attention because there's going to be other opportunities for community input and to advocate for better plans from NCDOT.
Thank you for that update. What else is new? What else are you thinking about at Mountain True right now?
Well, I think The other things we want to talk about was, you know, the outcome of the last statewide budget that was passed by the General Assembly earlier this month. You know, there were real problems with the process for that budget. It's a $23.9 billion budget that was decided pretty much by the majority party behind closed doors without any opportunity for public input. That we find that unacceptable. It's just not the right way to run a state. But that said, you know, we do keep lines of communications open with many of our West Carolina-based lawmakers here. And, you know, we had two little silver linings that came out of those relationships that we maintain. And the first one was landslide hazard mapping. We got $3.6 million included in the budget for the completion of landslide hazard mapping. And that was done by Chuck McGrady of Henderson County. This reinstates funds that were cut by the NCGA in 2011. The project was supposed to actually map the risk of landslides in 19 Western North Carolina counties. Four only ever got completed, and those were Macon, Watauga, Buncombe, and Henderson counties. The other 11 still haven't been mapped. And what that means is that people just don't know what their risks are. Homeowners don't know. The communities don't know. Local government doesn't know. And so nothing's being done. And, you know, I remember we came in last year and talked to you a little bit about, you know, well, we're always talking about climate change. And last year it was about wildfires. And this year we're talking about mudslides and flooding. And those are both effects of climate change. And you know, I mean, we've had the wet, you know, May was the wettest month on record for Asheville. And there was a lot of havoc here in the month of May. You know, three people died, one in Polk County and two in Watauga County. And, you know, hazard mapping funding could have at least, or may have at least prevented the one in Polk, because their family came out saying, you know, we had no idea that we were living in a house where there was such a risk to us and our neighbors. And, you know, they made the point that they have a right to know the risks. So this hazard mapping is really important. You know, it's really important. And allowing that money or making that money available for counties, the next step is for the counties to approach and to get that money to get these studies underway.
Yeah, I think that's really relevant right now, not just for homeowners, but even on highways right now. In McDowell County, 6 miles of I-40 were blocked by a landslide near Old Fort during all of the flooding that was happening about a month ago. Highway 9 continues to be blocked and has a 50-mile detour and won't be open until the end of July from that landslide. So this is happening right now.
What we're doing is we're working with these local counties, especially Transylvania County and Polk County, on getting them to do hazard mapping. It's like once we have that knowledge, you know, we're hoping that home buyers and property owners will know their risks. It becomes a public resource that's available to download from the website of the NCDEQ. So you can always check there. The four existing counties' maps are there. And then as new mapping is done, those county maps will also be there. And then, you know, it's one thing to know what the risks are. And then it's like, you know, Henderson County and Watauga County, where those two people died this year, they had hazard maps, you know, and so it's what's next. And so we're trying to work with counties to find out what their tolerance is towards kind of common sense development guidelines and what those could look like. And so we're pushing for those. You know, we want people to not only know what their risks are, but for people not to take unnecessary risks in building their homes. And then I guess the other silver lining that got passed, it wasn't nearly the same dollar amount, the big wow, $3.6 million, but Deanna Ballard from up in the high country, speaking of Watauga County, she found $20,000 to help actually as a grant for Mountain True towards a project that we're working on to do DNA testing for whirling disease, which affects local trout populations here. Whirling disease, as many of the people who may be listening who love to fly fish know, is this really complex parasite called Myxobilis cerebralis. That's a tough one. And it goes through a bunch of different hosts, including a small worm, which is one of the ways that they can infect a trout, or they can infect trout directly through spores in the water. It really gets the fish when they're young, when they're juveniles, and because these young fish have more cartilage and are still growing, so they're more susceptible, and it deforms their cartilage and skeletal tissue so that essentially they end up swimming in almost like a corkscrew pattern. That makes it harder for them to feed themselves, and it makes them much more susceptible to predators. And the species that are affected, local species that are affected, are rainbow brook and brown trout. And so that's a big deal. The mortality for these things, it can absolutely devastate a trout population, because the mortality among these young fish can be like 90%, and then the survivors are deformed. You know, the other 10% end up going into adulthood deformed and very vulnerable. Here, they found these infected trout both in North Carolina first, and now across the border in Tennessee. This has been around the Watauga River area. We suspect that that it's far more widespread, but we just don't know. And part of that's because we haven't done the studies to find out. And that's what we're trying to do. But this eDNA process, environmental DNA, it allows us to sample the water. So what it is organisms, they release their DNA into their environment through like their secretions, through their mucus, through, you know, shed skin and hair, through carcasses. All those cells like end up in our environment, and in the case of water, it ends up in a giant solution. Essentially, the DNA itself, right, becomes diluted and distributed, so we can detect it in very low concentrations over a large area. So scientists have already found the markers, the DNA markers for this parasite. So if we go and take these water samples, we can tell whether or not the parasite's in the river, even if we don't have a parasite in the water sample, just from because their DNA might be there. So we want to do this eDNA testing, you know, basically in every river and stream throughout Western North Carolina. Why that would be useful is because if we know where it is, we might have a better sense of where it's coming from. In the past, this thing originated in Germany and then spread to the United States. In the United States, it seems to have been spreading along kind of fish hatcheries. And so we want to know if that's also the case here. And if that's the case, then we can make recommendations to both the Wildlife Commission and to the Department of Agriculture about how to better manage those to be able to stop the spread of this disease, which can kill trout. And why we want to stop the spread of disease, a disease that's killing trout, is because it could both kill native trout species, but it can also really hurt our economy. Fly fishing here, trout fishing here, it's in North Carolina, according to the Wildlife Resources Commission, is a $383 million activity. 150,000 trout anglers spend about 1.5 million days out on the river. And that was 2014 numbers. And that sport's only gotten more popular since then. So really, so many people's livelihoods depend on that kind of tourism, not just outfitters and gear makers, but, you know, that money distributes itself throughout all of our economy. So a lot of us would see, you know, the negative effects of destruction of local trout populations. So, you know, as I mentioned before, our real goal here, what we think, we put a price tag on this project of about $50,000. $20,000 definitely gets us in that direction, and we can kind of start that work. But to do what we need to do, where we can really kind of do across the whole state and really be able to figure out where we think it's being introduced from, we'll probably need to cover that $30,000 gap, which, if you know, you have a particularly enthusiastic fly fisherman out there listening, or they can go on to mountaintrue.org and make a donation. And if they want to, there's a comment section, a little comment area in when you make a donation on our online form. And if you put whirling disease, that money will be restricted towards that project. And so you could help us make up that gap.
If people want to learn more about these issues, can you say your website one more time?
Yeah, mountaintrue.org.
While you're here, could you remind our listeners about some of the resources that the Riverkeeper and Mountain True are able to offer?
Yeah, well, one thing is we just put out a new report, which you can find on our website, mountaintrue.org, which looks at all the streams and rivers of the French Broad watershed and gives them a grade of A to F. And so you can go on there and kind of check the general, like, what areas of the river are cleanest and what areas are dirtiest. More up to date, we post weekly water monitoring results for the French Broad and for the Watauga watershed at swimguide.org. That's actually a national website with 7,000 beaches and rivers available. But yeah, you should always check that before going out in the river and heed its warnings.
The information for the Watauga River is new, so that's another exciting development that we have, that is now on the swim guide in case anyone from Asheville's going up to the high country.
New this week.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for that resource. This time of year, when everyone's getting out and swimming, it's really important that people stay safe and pay attention and remember the importance of how the safety and health of our rivers affects our own safety and health. So thank you for your work in protecting our local ecosystem, for all the work that you do for our community. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.